This is Werewolf the Podcast. For an instant, the mighty Peter paused in the midst of his career, and mounting on a stump, addressed his troops in eloquent Low Dutch, exhorting them to fight like divils, and ensuring them that if they conquered, they should get plenty of booty. If they fell, they should be allowed the satisfaction, while dying, of reflecting that if it was in the service of their country, and after they were dead, of seeing their names inscribed in the Temple of Renown, and handed down, in company with all the other great men of the year, for their admiration of posterity. From Knickerbocker's History of New York, by Washington Irving.
High Level Games, the industry's first choice in taking your games to the next level. We are a podcast, blog, and new media network at highlevelgames.ca. We have blog posts about all of your favorite games going up 5 days a week, and a podcasting network with actual plays and shows that discuss role-playing games, with more rolling out all the time. We are on iTunes, Twitch, and YouTube. Find out more information at highlevelgames.ca, a site that certainly isn't controlled by a shadowy board of directors of otherworldly origin. That's highlevelgames.ca.
Please, help. They're coming. Welcome back to Werewolf the Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Heath. Today we're going to be reviewing Rage Across New York. Rage Across New York does have a content warning that I would like to note, that the book does include information on fictional child abuse, including potentially sexual violence against children. And this review, though it won't touch directly on those elements, will potentially discuss them in vague terms. And the book itself doesn't get into graphic details, but it is helpful to note that that is an element of this book. So Rage Across New York is the third book that was ever published for Werewolf the Apocalypse. It was published in 1992, and honestly, one of the key elements, I think, about this book that's interesting to note is that it dives into real serious issues very, very quickly. There's, I think, a sense in some fan elements that view Werewolf the Apocalypse as a fun game that doesn't necessarily dive into really deep emotional sort of cathartic moments, but I would definitely say Rage Across New York does that, and it doesn't really shy away from those things either. So Rage Across New York is the first sort of setting book that Werewolf has, and it establishes the idea that Werewolf is going to not focus on cities like Vampire the Masquerade does. It's going to instead focus on states, regions, or areas that make a little bit more sense for werewolves to be traveling around within. So there are four chapters: history, geography, power groups and characters, and some suggested encounters. There's also a legend at the beginning and an introduction that welcomes the storyteller and players to the general idea of what's going to be presented in the book in general. Starting at the beginning, I've got to say I don't particularly like the story that starts this book. I don't like a lot of the faux Native American stuff that Werewolf begins with early on in the game's run. Obviously, because New York is in the United States, which is in North America, there are references to older history that touch on Native American groups within the region that were here prior to European settlers and the systematic genocide of Native American peoples. That said, the way that history is presented in this book shows its age. 1992, there were clearly some misinterpretations, some overemphasis on the Bering Strait hypothesis, which is generally begun to be discounted both by Native Americans themselves and academia. Interesting to note that that history does include a lot of those elements. It includes a focus on the idea that the North American or the American continents were considered pure lands prior to European involvement. I think on some levels that does a bit of harm to the truth of Native American history in New York, in the Americas in general, as it kind of puts Native peoples on a pedestal and doesn't necessarily look at the realities of the history of the land management and the different wars and the different national interactions that occurred throughout the Americas between the various Native American peoples. That said, there are some decent historical elements here. It is directly tied into the World of Darkness. You see the idea of where some of the European settler actions against Native peoples happened and maybe why. And of course, because this is a World of Darkness book, it puts a little bit of those things onto supernatural groups. In particular, one group called the Seventh Generation. The Seventh Generation, the antagonist of this particular book, this antagonist that still is continuing on into the modern world and has a systematic focus of harming children who become adults who perpetuate the cycle of violence against children, against their own children. So that's their focus. And the step for the Seventh Generation is to create that cycle of violence, to emphasize that cycle of violence so that those individuals that have faced that violence continue to be open to the worm. You get the history. You get a fairly long history of New York, and then you get a geographic background of the entire state. What I like about that is it focuses on the entire state, not just on New York City, which is helpful. Later on in Vampire the Masquerade, there's a New York by Night, which is focused on just New York City. But this book focuses on the state in general, and having lived in upstate New York and actually run a werewolf game set in Albany, one of the reasons I have this book is because I wanted to know what werewolf had established as some sort of canon for this particular region. And it's a first edition book, and you can really tell that. There are some elements here that don't really make a lot of sense long term. They're interesting hooks for first edition. The idea of a great beast being the Lake Champlain monster, who is similar to the Loch Ness monster. That's an interesting little hook that's presented here. There are five different protectorates in New York: the North Country Protectorate, the Niagara Protectorate, Finger Lakes Protectorate, Catskill Protectorate, and New York City and the Sept of the Green. So those are the regions that werewolves have different interactions, different control over. And different tribes have different control over these different areas. So the Catskill Protectorate falls under the ostensible focus of Stargazers and the Silent Striders, which is interesting. And it's kind of left vague exactly why this is in this section, but there doesn't appear to be a lot of werewolf activity in that area, except for these two fairly antisocial to the rest of the nation tribes. Particularly in first edition, there is a bit of disconnect between what the Stargazers and the Silent Striders were interested in, invested in, so that tended to encourage their separation from the rest of the nation. The North Country Protectorate, which includes Adirondack Park, some of the area around Lake Ontario, St. Lawrence River, the far northern elements of New York State, near where it connects to both Canada and to Vermont. So that area is controlled by Geta Fenris, Shadow Lords, and Uktena, as well as being kind of fought for control between the Wendigo and the Red Talons. So this is an area that's potentially rife for a lot of different story, a lot of different interaction. That said, I think all of these different protectorates have their own background that's really interesting. The Niagara Protectorate is tended by a sept that's headed by both Uktena and Fianna. And for those two tribes to be working with one another, running a cairn together, running a sept together, is interesting. I would want to know more. Why is it? Why are those two tribes that potentially wouldn't necessarily get along, why are they connected and why are they working with one another? In the Finger Lakes Protectorate, you have some of the Native American influence. They talk about Hiawatha and the Council of the Five Nations, and obviously that happened several hundred years ago for this game's story, but it also talks about the burned over district and the rise of the women's rights movement and the different things that have been important to that region. And so they tie that into the Children of Gaia. Well, there are also connections between the Wendigo, the Oktun, and the Croatan, but the Children of Gaia have claimed most of the cairns in this area, which dovetail with the World of Darkness's focus on trying to connect supernaturals to real-world situations. I always want to veer through those things very carefully, and I don't know if these first edition books do that as effectively as I would like, but it's interesting to note that the Children of Gaia have that sort of connection here to the women's rights movement and some of the other religious movements that have started in that region of New York. Then they go into New York City. So there is 3 or 4 pages on New York City, on the different parks, the different werewolf activity, where there are toxic waste sites. There's actually a nice map of pollution around the city, which is helpful for werewolves deciding, okay, these are the areas we're going to try to clean up in the real world. These are the areas we're going to potentially try and defeat the worm in the Umbra in those areas as well. Of course, in a place like New York, particularly in the early 90s, when New York was just starting to see a revitalization to the place that it is now, New York City was not a particularly nice area at the time. So it's interesting to see, like, this provides a lot of story hooks for players, for storytellers wanting to dive into the game in New York, in New York City. Then after that section, we get into chapter 3, which are power groups and characters. It starts off with this idea that werewolves themselves are not particularly good to their children, which kind of makes sense if you look at the concepts of rage and what that might mean for werewolves. But references that all werewolves have type O blood, which is weird. I'm not sure why that's important. Just an interesting note of something to see in this. Then they dive into the different tribes. So you have the Black Fury. You have all the different tribes that are represented here. Some of these characters are more interesting than other. I'm not going to dive into all of them in particular, but you've got all of the different protectorates represented here by one or two characters. Most important for a storyteller that's looking into the long-term meta plot of Werewolf the Apocalypse is information on Jacob Morningkill, who is an important werewolf that has control of a sept in the North Country Protectorate. Now, Jacob Morningkill has connections to Jonas Albrecht, and Jonas Albrecht eventually becomes the king of the Garou Nation. So I think it's interesting to note that I believe this is the first time he is mentioned, unless the fiction had already come out in which he and Jonas were connected. I'm not sure about exactly what the publication history on the fiction was, but interesting to note, if you're looking for statistics on Jacob Morningkill, this is the place to find them. I think it's interesting to note also that characters cross the spectrum of ethnic group and as well as werewolf tribal groups, so there's a pretty good diversity of character concepts and character ideas here, and I think each tribe has at least 2 drastically different character options that are presented. You also have, after the characters, the cairns. The first is the Sept of the Whitewater, which is at Niagara Falls. Then you have the Sept of the Sentinel, which is Adirondack Mountains. Then you have the Sept of the Green, which we mentioned in our last recording, and that is in Central Park in Manhattan. Then you have the Sept of the Hand of Gaia, which is near Seneca Lake in the Finger Lakes region. There's also a long section, or there's a section, I wouldn't say it's long, a section on the Defiler Worm and what defilement means for the worm in this particular area. And then we get to the 7th generation. Now, vampire players are going to be thinking, oh, wait, does that have any connection to the idea of generation within Vampire the Masquerade? And it doesn't. What the 7th generation is referencing is the idea of what impacts us impacts our descendants all the way to the 7th generation. So The seventh generation's goal, as we mentioned before, is to harm children so that they are more open to the influence of the worm, and that harm continues on, becomes a systematic thing. And they have several what they call violations. These are the tenets of the seventh generation. The first violation is assaults on the innocent. I'm going to not dive into these, I'm just going to read them as they stand. The second violation is the strangulation of trust. The third violation is secrets. The fourth violation, the victim as victimizer. The fifth violation, the death of hope. So this is the antagonist that's presented in the third book in Werewolf the Apocalypse. The first really in-depth antagonist for players to war against. And the seventh generation's focus is really different than what you'll see from a lot of other antagonists in role-playing games. They're not necessarily supernatural directly. They have a few femori, they have a few connections to the worm. Some of their members of their cult have powers from those connections. Overall, they're just a systematic group of abusers that look for children and people to continue to abuse, to spread harm throughout the world. And I think we can say that we've seen people like that in our day-to-day lives, in the real world. So this gets pretty close to reality for some people, and it's going to be something that's a little bit difficult for some players to interact with. And honestly, after this book, the seventh generation is not mentioned as an antagonist again. I think there was a concern that this went potentially too far, and maybe something like this would have ended up in a Black Dog Games book if it had come out a little bit later on in the game's run. But you're provided with different characters that are connected to the seventh generation. You're provided with their different castes, their different groups that are involved in different areas of government and different areas of society. And this is a conspiracy that is everywhere. Some of it's more overtly religious, and some of it is just this idea of systematic harm. So that effectively is Rage Across New York. It's a good description of New York, and does have a little bit of information on changelings and what they call fairies in this, a little bit of information on vampires, both the Sabbat and the Camarilla. And then you get encounters is just kind of a small section of different story hooks, as I mentioned before. Some of them connect directly with the seventh generation. Some of them are related to other plots that you could dive into in New York. So I tend to want to give you a general idea on if I would suggest people purchase a book. And I don't know about Rage Across New York. I think it is a book that has a lot of value for what it provides information-wise on New York, what it provides information on kind of what the goals of Werewolf the Apocalypse were early on in the game's design and run. That said, if the concepts of harm against children are not something that you as a storyteller or you as a player are comfortable engaging with, then it's not necessarily a book that I would pick up, because it doesn't really shy away from that. So I guess the question comes down to, is it in the long run a book that you think would bring some value to what you would bring or do at the table? And potentially. So if those conditions are met, if you want to run a game in New York, it could be a valuable resource. You just have to decide what is right for you and what is right for the people that you're playing with. And hopefully you've been able to have that discussion. So that's Rage Across New York. I really appreciate you listening. As always, please send us any comments, questions, or feedback. We're happy to discuss that. All right. Thanks very much. This has been Werewolf the Podcast, and I'm Josh Heath.
Hello, folks. Have you ever wished you could have an easy way to find gameplay videos and podcasts, or just media in general that deals with your favorite White Wolf role-playing games? Or have you ever wished you could find a forum to share gameplay that you have recorded, one which wouldn't be drowned out by random posts and discussion, so that your media could get the attention you want? Well, we have the answer for you in a Facebook group we run called White Wolf RPGs Gameplay and Media.
The group is specifically ran with the sole intent of it being a one-stop shop for people to view or share media involving the games we all love. We take thorough steps to ensure the page does not become cluttered and is easy to traverse. We are currently over 1,000 members strong, and we are continuing to rapidly grow with new media being shared every day. Stop on by. We hope to see you there.